What does it even mean to live a legacy? Often we think of legacy in terms of what people might think of us when we're dead, but then we're dead. We're going to instead explore a living legacy. This is your host, Danielle Strickland. This is the Right Side Up podcast. And this is a partnership venture with World Vision, Strong Women, Strong World. This is going to be challenging and inspiring as we interview people from all over the world in all kinds of different sectors, living a life now that will matter later. A living legacy. Buckle up. This is sure to be challenging and inspiring, and I'm glad you're here.
Hey, welcome to this episode of Right Side Up. We are on a journey of living a legacy instead of leaving one. And it occurred to us that there are barriers to doing this that are not just external ones. They are internal ones. And that if we don't pay attention to what's happening on the inside of us, then oftentimes the outside of us doesn't look like how we would love it to look. Or even if it does, it's not done in the way that we love it to look. And so Jenna Riemersma is the founder and clinical director of the Atlanta Center for Relational Healing. She's teaching faculty. She's got a policy degree from Harvard, and she also has a professionally counseling degree, but both masters. She is delightful, and she is a trained therapist in many different areas, but specifically, we're talking about the internal family systems theory and counseling technique and therapy that she specializes in, and she's written several books. You're going to hear from her. Her ability to explain complex things simply, her compassion that you can feel, her curiosity, her openness is delightful. And her insights have really helped me personally. I really hope that they're going to help you too. Actually, I know they're going to help you. And there will be lots of show notes in this one and some links to go to for next steps if this is something that you think would enhance your journey to living the way you want to live now that might matter for the long haul. So please welcome Jenna to the podcast. Hey, Jenna, thanks for being with us on the Right Side Up podcast. We're thrilled to have you back. You're a regular. We love featuring your voice here.
I'm so honored to be invited back. Thank you for having me, Danielle.
Hey, Jenna, this season is about living a legacy, present tense, rather than leaving one later after you're done. And it occurred to me that you might help us here because I saw in your bio that you have a degree in governance. You have a degree in public policy. And then you have a degree in therapy, in internal therapy. And particularly what I love is much of what I've learned about internal family systems from your book, Altogether You. So I'm wondering if you can, first of all, just maybe introduce the audience to like how those two things go together, public policy and therapy and internal family systems. How did they come together for you? And why do you think that might matter in this discussion?
That's a beautiful question. I'm not sure anyone's asked me that before, but I love kind of the synergy between those two aspects of my life. I have always felt a deep desire to make the world a better place. And in my 20s, I thought the way that I would do that was working on Capitol Hill and influencing public policy. And I loved my time there, became slightly disillusioned with that, and felt very called to kind of live out that purpose through trauma healing and becoming a therapist. And what I love about those two realities is that whether we're talking about public policy or whether we're talking about our own personal experience of faith or healing, they both are about a system. So working together in Congress, we are working together ideally in a well-functioning system that is integrated and represents all perspectives and all different sides. The same is true of our internal, all the different parts of us internally. When our internal system is well aligned and led by the Spirit, we, all different parts of us are well represented and we're led by that divine within. But what happens is when a part of a system becomes burdened or imbalanced, the system starts to polarize. And we begin to find that we lose access to that deep core of who we truly are or who the system truly is. And healing can come from acknowledging the burdens that those different parts of our systems carry and bringing that deep core essence of healing, the what I would call the God image inside of us, to those burdened parts so that they can be less polarized and we can have less warring inside of us, less warring in our political parties, less warring in our businesses. This system's way of thinking is deeply connective, really resonates with the truths of Jesus's message, and I think has application far beyond our own personal internal world. So there really is a beautiful synergy between those two parts of my life.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Jen, I was thinking, you know, as I've explored this internal family systems, there was an aha. I think it actually, you were on this podcast and I had the aha when you were speaking about, you know, this fragmentation, you know, how we are fragmented internally. And we all feel the I think intuitively, whether or not you're fully bought into the theory or you've told, you know, whether you have doubts or whatever, I feel like intuitively or experientially, we all understand what it means to be fragmented, where we feel torn in a thousand different directions, or we feel like out of connection with our body or out of connection with our emotions. And I feel like the more driven you are, you know, or the more high powered or the more, you know, focused you are, and maybe this is part of your disillusionment of working like in policy, is like kind of the more, you know, high power your like calling is, almost the more fragmented you have to be. At least this is the message that we've been given. So I wonder about that. Like, I guess you're in your 20s and you're like, I don't want, if this is what it means to be like driven to change the world, I'm not interested. And I feel like a whole generation is also onto that. I think there's like a whole generation that's like, I don't want that. Whatever that life is that is highly compartmentalized, super fragmented. So you have these, even in my Christian faith, you have these like incredible evangelists, for example, and then you read their life story and you're a little horrified because actually their parenting was horrific or their marriages were broken or their own, you know, internal system was really out of sorts with the message that they were bringing. Tell us how we can begin. Like, what are your steps? Like, how do we begin to identify that that's an issue? And then if that is happening in our lives, how do we actually get to doing something about it?
It's a really important question. And I think it might be helpful for anyone who's listening who's not familiar with internal family systems or IFS. If it's okay, I'll just briefly express kind of how this new way of understanding human behavior views us as individuals. And it's very consistent with what I read in Scripture. Scripture sort of articulates that we are created in the image of a triune God, which means one God with three parts. And if we're created in the image of one God with many parts, it makes sense that we are one human with many parts. And our parts are designed, they're all good. They're all good parts of us. We're all designed with the image of God at our core that's designed to be our internal leader that connects us to the larger divine outside of us. And these many different wonderful parts that make up our unique personalities. So as I recall, you're a 7 on the Enneagram, so you have a really fun part, and I'm a 1 on the Enneagram, so I have an organized part, and everybody is unique and different in these lovely and wonderful ways. And what happens is when difficult things happen in life, that can be capital T traumas or just life traumas that we've all experienced growing up in the difficult world that we're in right now, our parts become burdened. So these good parts, it's almost as if there's a blanket thrown over the top of them and they take on these burdens of trauma. Or in Christianity, Catholicism, we would call it sin, meaning that things are not the way that they should be. And that causes our parts to behave in ways that are not their original positive intent. So our system becomes lopsided. And now, instead of there being a harmonious experience inside of us, now we have parts at war. So a common experience for people who are quite driven, who are very successful, would be one part gets a message early on, I'm not enough. Maybe you grew up in a very perfectionistic environment or a very high-pressured academic setting or whatever it might be. Maybe you had an older sibling who was a rock star and you were just never quite enough for mom or dad's expectations or to meet up to the expectations of your sibling or your social environment or social media is masterful at creating this kind of a part in all of us. I am just not enough of anything. I'm not beautiful enough, smart enough, social media enough. And so we kind of all have what IFS calls these exiled parts of us that feel alone, broken, not enough. And of course, that's a very painful feeling to have. So we tend to get these other parts that become burdened, trying to avoid ever feeling that not enoughness. And those parts we call managers, because they try to manage our lives so that we never feel that pain of the not enough part of us. And those tend to be parts that are perfectionistic, overachieving, high-performing, driven. I know no one can relate to having parts like this, but they're good parts. They've just gotten stuck in some unhelpful roles because they push us in a way that is not their original intent. So we become exhausted. We become disillusioned. We feel even more alone because it's really lonely at the top. You don't really have time for relationships when these manager parts are pushing really hard. And then we will always have these reactive parts that push back against the managers, usually with equal intensity. And those we call the firefighters, because they try to come in and put out the pain when the managers don't work. And the firefighters do all the things that come into my office. They are all the addictions, dissociation, drinking, self-harm, suicidality. And so what happens is most of us go around this little triangle over and over and over again, where our striving, inner critic, perfectionistic control parts run our lives. Also, the spiritualizing parts, those are my favorites. They're very dear to my heart. These are sweet ones who get burdened trying to do our religion in a way that will be good enough so we don't have to feel I'm not enough for God. And that's very different than the divine God image within all of us. And they push us to do all the things and volunteer and memorize the Bible verses and lead the business. And then something happens, they never work out. And then we feel, oh no, I've disappointed God. I didn't do it right. I didn't give the way that God wants me to give, or I didn't volunteer. And then the firefighters come in. So they typically will go, well, that's it. I'm out. I'm moving to the beach. I'm quitting everything. And I'm just drinking margaritas sitting on the beach. Forget it. I'm out. And we go around and around, and we're missing in that sort of circle that we get in, we're missing the access to the actual connection to the divine within us. And the way that we connect with that is to surrender into it. We welcome all of these parts, get to know how they're trying to help us. And when they kind of settle back, that image of God can emerge spontaneously. It's kind of like the sun is always in the sky, but if the clouds are covering it, we don't have any access to it. Just like the God image is always inside us. But if our striving, spiritualizing, inner critic is covering the God image, we don't have access to it. And it's when we welcome those parts, which is exactly what Jesus invited us to do. He welcomed the people who were in the most pain, that were struggling the most, welcomed, became curious about them. They calm down and settle back, and the spontaneous image of God emerges. And so it's really this beautiful process of surrender rather than the striving that our burdened parts get into, that not only is the foundation for our healing, because the image of God is the one that can heal these parts that have gotten stuck in these unhelpful roles, but it's also the answer to that deep connection to the divine within us that gives us the wisdom. What decision do I want to make about my philanthropy? What decision is the one that I'm being called to in my business with my family? That's where we really hear from the divine versus trying to seek it out or force it.
You know, it's so beautiful to hear it again. I mean, I think I could hear this over and over again just to help remind myself that, you know, the calling is for us to, I often say this, the calling for us is to live from love, not for it. And that this idea of constantly trying to earn, you know, love, even God's love or other people's love or what other people think of us governing our lives, it's like really getting to this core place of God leading us from where God breathed into us. you know, that is such an interesting, I think we can all, as we hear it, it feels, you know, the more that you listen to this, the more it's like, oh yes, like this might actually be the problem, in that if we're fragmented from our own selves and we can't get into harmony or rightness or wholeness within ourselves, how on earth are we going to be genuinely connected with other people? And how will we do this work of what Paul describes in the Bible as a ministry of reconciliation, right? Like, how do we bring people to God? How do we bring people to themselves? How do we bring people to one another? If we can't do that inside of us, how can we do that for anybody else? I guess that for me was the real connect, was this thing is not just an internal journey. Because I feel like as a very type A driven person, I'll be like, look, someone's got time for that, but I don't, because people are, you know, in need and I got to be there. And again, there's that cycle of like, I don't have time, or I don't value the thing that could actually liberate me to do the thing I'm called to do.
Yes.
From a better place,
yeah.
You know, from a healed, holistic place.
Sure.
Do you see that a lot? And what would you say to people who are like, look, nobody's got time for that. I got a business to run, you know, or I've got this nonprofit. I've got people dying literally of hunger and I've got to get there. What's your advice there?
I can't relate to that at all. Wink, wink, nod, nod. I've never experienced those kinds of parts at war. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think this goes back as far as time and eternal. We hear Paul talking about this in scripture. He says, why am I doing these things that I don't want to do? The thing I want to do, I don't do. And the thing I don't want to do, I do do. What a wretched man am I. And I love this because he's really talking about all of our experience as humans, which is we all have these parts at war. And when we are feeling something that is not the Spirit of God, and in internal family systems, we call that sort of core at the heart of us the self, or I translate that into more spiritual terms with the God image, the Imago Dei, and it will always have the 8C qualities: calm, curious, connected, compassionate, clear-minded, courageous. Like, it is just this beautiful flow state. You know, maybe we experience that. We talk about it as a mountaintop experience, or sometimes in worship, you just feel like, oh. And there's this sense that all of the striving, all of the shoulding, all of the guilt, all of the everything just melts away. And we feel completely in union with the divine and completely loved and known and held exactly as we are. Except most of us don't live in that state, which is totally normal. Our parts tend to take over. And what frequently happens, what certainly happened in my experience, is I get these manager parts. And I have a type A personality as well. And my manager, spiritualizer, do it right, perfectionist parts will take over and kind of run my life. And they do really good things. And they say really good things. They run ministries. They volunteer at Vacation Bible School, and they make casseroles for sick people. And they do all these wonderful, wonderful things that are good, but they're coming out of a burdened place. And as a result, it's exhausting. And I don't feel connected to God. I feel pressured. I feel like I can't say no. I feel like, what are people going to think? Or what is God going to think if I don't get up at 5 o'clock and do this quiet time and pray for all these people? It's coming out of a should place, if that makes sense. Ugh. There's a push. There's an agenda behind it. And if we ask those parts of ourselves, oh my goodness, hey there, what little parts that are pushing me to do it right and please God and please everybody else, what are you afraid would happen if you didn't take me over and make me get up at 5 or bring the casserole or run the outreach or whatever it is? And usually what we'll hear is, I won't be good enough, or I'll be rejected, or I'll be a sinner. These parts have internalized messages that are about performance and that are about doing rather than being. And so those parts can be very strong, and they run our lives for a super long time. until they get so exhausted, which is usually in our 40s or 50s, that they can't keep it up. The exiles they're trying to protect come to the surface. We feel not good enough, not appreciated, not seen, exhausted, disconnected, alone. And those firefighters, those reactive parts of us jump in and they're like, you know, forget this whole faith thing. Hey, you know what? Why don't you just quit? Just leave. I mean, what? This isn't working. You're just exhausted and you're all alone and you can't even be real. And let's just do something else.
Yeah, or even just, I feel like those firefighters in a faith-based concept don't quit. They just numb.
Yes.
You know, so what if every night you, you know, had three glasses of wine to try to take the edge off? Or what if you just scrolled or Netflixed it or, you know, like, so it's, it because it's a slow death. I wish the firefighter was like, just quit, because then you'd be like, wow, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
But it's like this slow, you know, this slow numbing process where you're not even really fully, fully awake. So that, so getting, and that this is one of the principles, I think, as I read more about this counseling technique. Jenna, you're mentioned as a book, your All Together You book is mentioned by Richard Schwartz in his, the founder of this theory's book called No Bad Parts. And one of the things I think most profoundly impacted me when I read Richard's book is that he went into this work as an atheist and has come out of it as a believer. He doesn't know quite what he believes specifically. And that's where he's like, if, you know, Jenna's a Christian, talk to her. And my other buddy's a Buddhist, talk to him. But what he did discover in just accessing people's core self, or what we would say the image of God in people, he figured out there has to be a God. This makes no theoretical sense from an atheistic framework. And I think that's amazing that people, an atheist studying people, discovered God inside of them. I mean, like, that's what? It's sort of like the scientist that looks at the vastness of space and goes, okay, God, this is so designed in here that this has got to be, there's a designer, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like the same thing, except the vastness, like the incredible beauty inside of every human is that same discovery.
Exactly.
And I guess that's, you know, Christians, people who believe that Jesus has come to help us connect, be reconciled fully to that, to God, you know, to the Spirit of God that is in us, is what the scripture says, that we should live, that should be a sign and a wonder to people that there is a God.
Yeah.
And I think it is. I think it is. But we get so trapped. So getting curious, and this is, I think, one of the principles of IFS that I love and that you introduced me to first, is this idea of compassionate curiosity over judgment. So this, if you were raised in a religious framework, this is new.
Yes.
This is new. And this is one of the most liberating things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we can see in the life of Jesus everywhere. As soon as I saw this, I'm like, this is literally what Jesus is, compassionately curious all the time. All he does is ask questions. And we are so judgmental, you know, and taught to be judgmental. So when we feel those things happening, like you describe, we're always pushing back with these messages of shame and judgment. Instead of what you just did, which was, why are you doing that? What do you believe will happen if we don't perform this way? Like, getting that, you know, curious about our own motives and what's going on inside of us.
Exactly. And there's a beautiful IFS phrase that C. Sykes, one of our lead trainers, uses. It's about relationship, not control. So the goal of internal family systems, when we're using it in a therapeutic approach, is for all parts of us to come into relationship with the God image inside of us, or as IFS would call it, the self inside of us, the core authentic self. But what it is it's providing secure internal attachment for every part of us to the divine within us. And it isn't until we do that, that we can offer that same external secure attachment, that radiance of Christ, if you will, to the world outside of us. Because if we're trying to witness or minister or evangelize out of a part, our parts carry the shame, the judgment, the guilt, all the shoulds. The God image inside of us does not. So if we're doing our faith, quote unquote, out of a part. That part may be doing good things, speaking all the right words, all the things. But if it's coming out of a place of judgment, shame, guilt, should, push, that's a part. That's a burdened part. And the first thing we want to do is notice that. If it has an agenda, if it has a sense of pushing or judgment, what we want to do is help that part of us get into secure attachment with the God image inside of us. And the way that we do that is we notice it. I've developed kind of a shorthand of the model to help people, because the model itself, if we're doing therapy together, is actually pretty complex. But I want to help people be able to access some of the beauty of it. So I just have three words for people: notice, know, and need. And I invite us all to move toward every part of ourselves with this curiosity and compassion. So if I'm noticing that there's a part of me that feels like I have to do this action, this ministry, this whatever it might be, or there's a part of me that's judging me or that's judging someone else, what I want to do is notice it. Okay, I'm noticing some judgment coming up for me. Where am I noticing that judgment? Oh, it's in my thoughts. I'm having lots and lots of judgy thoughts. And come to think of it, my jaw is kind of tight when I have those judgy thoughts. Okay, so we're going to stay with that noticing until we can begin to open it, notice it open-heartedly. And other parts of us are not going to like the judgy part. So we have to just welcome those sweet parts and say, hey, I get it. Like, I get why you don't appreciate the judging part, but could you give me a little minute just to get curious about it? So we stay with the noticing until we can notice with open-heartedness the judging. And then we ask the judging part, what do you want me to know about you? What do you want me to know about why you just took me over right now? What are you afraid would happen if you didn't take me over and give me these judgy thoughts about that person or that ministry or that political group or those people, whatever it is? And usually the part will let us know what its positive intent is. Well, I'm afraid that then you'd be just like them. Or I'm afraid that you would not know what to say if you weren't telling people what to do, that you don't know how to be authentic. These sweet parts always have a positive intent, even if they're doing something that's not at all positive. And as we get in relationship with them, we learn what that is. Not like we're hearing voices or anything, but we'll just get kind of an impression or an image in our mind's eye. So that's notice and know. And then we can just ask that part, well, what do you need from me right now? So that you can be a little bit more relaxed, not have to take me over so much. And often the part will say, well, I just need you to acknowledge that I'm here and not try to push against me. Or I'll need you to use your voice or ask for help or set a boundary. They usually have something they need from us. And if we can offer that to them, they settle back. And now the judgment's no longer there. And we find that automatically there's this spacious open-heartedness toward whatever we were judging. It's the fruit of the vine that kind of goes poof. You know, when you're connected to the vine, and I was always very suspect of that because it always felt much more effortful for me. But it turns out rather than striving, when we surrender and welcome these parts, that fruit of the spirit spontaneously then just comes forth. And it's quite beautiful.
Well, hey, friends, we're in the middle of an episode with Jenna. I hope you're having a really aha, mind-blowing, insightful time as she talks about, and we talk together about, the connectedness and the need for internal connections. And it struck me that you would love to know about a program that Strong Women, Strong World at World Vision really champions, because this makes the most sense in this episode, and it's called Beyond Access. And Beyond Access really focuses on that interconnectedness of services, so that instead of just siloed projects that are helping in various places, Beyond Access puts women and girls at the center and really thinks through the interconnectedness of all the programs and how they're helping the person. So it puts a person at the center, and then the programs integrated in such a way that it helps. It is smart, and it's difficult. It's innovative. It's a learning approach that is curious, just like what we're talking about here. So if this is something that you would love to support and see as essential to the future of development, which World Vision does, and this really does take into that, you know, compassionate, curious connectedness that we're talking about in this episode,
then please, the show notes are there. Head to World Vision Beyond Access, and you can contribute to that program, which is making a real difference in holistic development.
Yeah, I've been reading the mystic, you know, Saint Teresa of Avila, the doctor of the church, for her wisdom and her, you know, sort of connection to God and the way she wrote about prayer. She wrote this book called The Interior Castle, which is this, you know, this invitation to encounter God by within, you know. I mean, you would love it. Literally, I'm like, wow, like IFS has a lot to thank Teresa for, you know. I think much of my resonance, even in the books, you know, you both No Bad Parts and Altogether You, your book, describing from a Christian perspective, this systems theory, both of them offer exercises. And the exercises were so familiar to me from prayer, you know, from the way that I've learned listening prayer or encountering prayer, where I invite God into whatever the situation is. And so it's been this really beautiful way of like this skill that I already sort of loved in terms of inviting God into spaces that I'm in and asking questions and really trying to create relationship with God, that this is the same skill, same thing I'm doing, but the exploration or the questions are related to my own internal makeup, which I think is also neat because I understand that God knows me better than I know myself. So that also has been a neat, I've literally, you know, used a couple of Richard Schwartz's exercises, but just invited Jesus to do it with me because I'm like, I'd really love for you to come help too. And that, you know, so that I, again, it's only served to connect me. And I think that, I guess that's the word really, isn't it? Is this connection.
Yes.
Where we're deeply connected to what is true and good and those 5C, you know, that we're walking out of, you know, compassion and calm and connectedness. Any other, like you talk to high-powered people all the time who are trying their best, and you mentioned this a couple times. This is really tricky to get to. Richard Rohr says this too in Breathing Underwater, which is a book he wrote about the 12 steps for religious leaders. And he said, you know, religious leaders are the hardest people to help because their addictions are applauded. You know, their disordered selves are like actually celebrated. And so to get to that place where you're willingly, even though other people are applauding you, you're willingly pausing to do this work. Do you have any tips? I mean, you said, you know, pay attention to exhaustion. That was, you said that, you know, you're exhausted when you're not working out of your authentic self.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. What are some other tips to get people here before they crash and they have no other choices?
Yeah.
Such an important question. And it's a simple answer, but not easy. And what I would say is, if we are feeling anything other than the 8C qualities, so if I'm feeling calm, clear-minded, compassionate, curious, connected, courageous, creative, like if I'm feeling those qualities, I'm probably in my self energy, in my God image energy. I'm being led by the Spirit. Pardon me while I mix language from both sides here. But if I'm feeling anything other than that, I've got a part that's taken me over. So if I'm feeling overwhelmed, ashamed, judgmental, exhausted, pressured, if I have an agenda, like if I am going to do something and I have an agenda to get other people to think the way I think or believe the way I believe or force something, or if I have any of this forcing energy, which those of us who are in leadership often do, there's nothing bad about it. Those parts often create huge ministries and do amazing things and write the books and change the world. It's amazing. And it's a burdened part. And so that's the check, is how am I feeling toward fill in the blank? How am I feeling toward the person sitting across from me? How am I feeling toward myself in this moment? How am I feeling toward this project, this volunteer opportunity, this philanthropic opportunity? And we just answer that question. And if it's not one of those open-hearted 8C qualities, then we know we have a part present. And that's what IFS calls a trailhead. So if we notice, I'm actually feeling a little judgy right now and stressed out and irritated with this person. Great. IFS's motto is all parts welcome. Just like Jesus said, come unto me, all of you little sweet ones who are carrying burdens, and I'm going to help. I'm going to give you rest for your soul. And that's what the God image inside of us does. It welcomes this irritable, exhausted, judgy part and says, well, where am I noticing it? Right? Because when we are feeling those feelings, that part, just like the cloud covers the sun, it's completely obscured our access to the God image inside of us. So all we can feel is judgy, irritated, and overwhelmed. So what we need to do is just love on that part until it calms down a little bit and we get a little bit of that God image coming forward so we can create this internal relationship between the divine and that part. So we say, okay, where am I noticing the judginess and the exhaustion? Oh, it's just in my shoulders, the pit of my stomach. Okay, again, we're just going to notice that until we can notice it open-heartedly. Just welcome it, send it some loving kindness, which is kind of the reverse of what I was always taught to do to be a good spiritual person. Like, you don't welcome your judginess. You try to exile it. And interestingly, that makes it stronger because it doesn't feel appreciated and it kicks back up even stronger when we try to push these away, when we try to move against these parts. Jesus moves toward them, and that's what we want to do. So we move toward this part. We get to know why it got triggered, what it's afraid would happen if it didn't take us over, and what it needs. Notice no need. That's how we work with our parts and gain some more access to the authentic God image inside of us. Not that so that we won't have parts or so that they'll go away, but so that we can be led by the Spirit, led by the God image. And ultimately, if those parts are carrying burdens that are obscuring their fundamental positive qualities, the God image is the one that can help to unburden them. That's what we do in IFS therapy. So it's key to both our healing and also to our connection to the divine. And it's very synergistic with centering prayer, listening prayer, all of course, the age-old mystic traditions in our faith communities that we've just in recent history, as we were chatting before the podcast, have been a little bit lost as regular practices in our faith communities in some places, but really are the beautiful spiritual heritage that we have and that our forefathers brought to us, forefathers and foremothers, like Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross. And it's a very meditative, relational connection to the divine that is what our souls are made for.
Yeah, I feel like it's also what we're so thirsty for in this, you know, in this day and age.
Yes.
Okay, this is crazy to say, but really quickly, the last section of the No Parts book, and you mentioned this a little bit even just in some of your descriptions of when you notice a part that's burdened, one of the big notices is physical.
Yes.
So talk to me about, this is mind-blowing. I feel like Gabor Mate also wrote a book called The Myth of Normal, where he really goes for this connection between dis-ease or much of these like physical maladies that are facing large percentages of women, actually, fascinatingly enough. He says they're repressed emotions that are being stored in our body. Do you see this? And then this, because, you know, you mentioned a couple of times, I notice what it's doing in my body. So that's talk to me a little bit about that connection and how that might help us free us to actually live differently and authentically and beautifully in the world.
I love this so much. And I will try not to geek out on neurochemistry in this answer. But this connection is fascinating because the best of neuroscience, the best of our clinical expertise and our spiritual journeys have kind of come together in the fields now. Gabor Mate's work, Richard Swart's work, Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote the penultimate book, The Body Keeps the Score. What we are understanding now about neurochemistry is integrating this so powerfully. And what we are learning is that our parts, when they are burdened, will utilize our bodies in their agenda for us. And it is deeply connected to our neurochemistry, to our 10th cranial nerve, polyvagal theory. There's so much beautiful research being done on this. But for example, the first piece of research that landed internal family systems on the NREPP evidence-based map was on rheumatoid arthritis, not on mental health. And working with folks who had rheumatoid arthritis, what they discovered is that, of course, it is a reflection of parts at war. And so many of us who have strong manager parts that caretake other people, that, you know, run us ragged, that don't pay attention to our own needs, those parts can be very strong. And the firefighters whose job it is to kind of push back on them to provide us some balance, some nurture, some self-care, if we don't listen to them at a lower level, they escalate and use our bodies in their service. And so what we found is that the rheumatoid arthritis, many of these conditions are conditions of inflammation. The dis-ease state is a state that is a derivative of chronic inflammation. Rheumatoid arthritis, cancers, many things are, that is the case with. And those stress hormones, the cortisol, the adrenaline, contribute to this inflammation state. And what happened was the firefighters would take over and literally disable the individuals who are struggling with rheumatoid arthritis so that they couldn't, the managers could not engage in this self-denying, exhausting caretaking any longer. None of this happening at a conscious level. So what this is not saying is, oh, it's all in your mind. It's not. It's a very real physical phenomenon. And it's also not saying this is something you're choosing. No one would choose to have disease, illness, rheumatoid arthritis, or anything else. But what it does help us become aware of is that a lot of these particularly chronic maladies that are elusive to Western medicine, things like irritable bowel, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, all of the like Hashimoto's disease, autoimmune diseases, they are particularly in partnership with parts. And so when we're doing IFS work, the first place we start is in the body. Where do you notice this in or around your body? So that's how I would start an IFS session. Someone would come in and say, I'm feeling such and such and so and so. And I'll say, great, could we welcome that? Where do you notice it in or around your body? Because our parts live in different places in our bodies. Often they're held in tension in our shoulders, in our necks, in our brow, in our jaw, feeling in our gut, these types of things, racing heart, our throat closing down, various things. And we can geolocate them physiologically in our bodies. And we can actually, when we come into relationship with these parts that we haven't listened to, and so they've escalated to using our bodies to the point where maybe they have migraines or some of these other things, we can address that in a much more successful way so they don't have to shut us down like that. I had a client who came into session one day, and she said she slumped down in the chair, was covering her eyes, and she said, I almost couldn't come today. I have this terrible migraine. It's so weird. I never get migraines. But I came anyway. I'm not sure why I'm in so much pain. And I said, well, could we just welcome your migraine for a minute? Let's just welcome it. Send it some loving kindness. Could you just let it really be here? Let it know it's welcome here. And see what your migraine wants us to know. And in about 5 minutes, we developed a relationship with the migraine, the part of her that was giving her the migraine. The migraine let us know that it knew our intent for the day was to do some deep trauma healing, and it was afraid she was going to get flooded, and she was going to have to leave that appointment and go into another meeting. And it was not going to let that happen. When we figured that out, I said, thank you so much for your resourcefulness. If we agree that today we won't do that trauma healing, would you be okay settling back and letting her be present without pain? And it did. The migraine instantly was gone, and we went ahead with a different agenda for the session. So it is, and I'm not saying that every physical malady is a part and can be relieved that easily, but many of our physical sufferings, especially the chronic ambiguous ones, can really be effectively worked with from an IFS lens, where our traditional medical approaches absolutely do not just sort of throw drugs at them and they don't really resolve. Our bodies let us know. And typically when we're feeling something chronic like that, it's our firefighters pushing back against hard pressured managers And they're shutting us down so we can't keep going at such a breakneck pace.
I think even seeing our bodies as a positive part of this connected life is like a game changer for most leaders I know, and women I know specifically, who have been taught to war against their bodies. So it's all so beautiful. Jenna, if people are, they're listening to this and they're going, I got to find out more. What are your best, where do they go from here? We're going to link your book, Altogether You, and your website.
Oh.
We're going to link Richard Schwartz's No Bad Parts. What other, you know, what, where would people go next steps if they really want to, I got to get to this.
I love it. Well, they're welcome to come and check out movetoward.com, which is my website. I've got lots of free resources for them. I also offer free guided meditations on insight timers. So if people want to move towards specific parts of themselves, like their anger or boundaries or whatever it might be, I've got lots of free resources there. And I actually just released a brand new book called Altogether Us. It is a comprehensive guide. Dick Schwartz wrote the first chapter on integrating the IFS model with everything under the sun. Every chapter is a standalone little 30-page piece of content. So if you're interested specifically on how do I integrate IFS with parenting, with being in a relationship, in a coupleship, with sexuality, with addiction, with all the things, this book is kind of the go-to book. And it's been a real honor to work on that. So those are some ways that people can connect. And of course, the IFS Institute, if you are a therapist and you are interested in getting trained, I recommend the IFS Institute for that as well.
Yeah, because this has been such a breakthrough in terms of people really experiencing a kind of freedom that they haven't before.
Yes.
I remember you mentioning that last time where it's just like we see more and more people trained
because
there's a lot of people needing this help. So that's wonderful. I got to get that new book. I was telling you before the podcast, I keep giving away your book. So we need to work on some cases, some boxes.
I was wondering.
So I can give it away more. But I couldn't recommend it more. It's a delightful to know you, Jenna, and to watch the way you're serving out of your authentic self in such a beautiful way. We really hope that this session really helps you guys, you listeners out there, to live out of your authentic self and really do what it is you long to do and do it now in a beautiful way. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, I really hope you're enjoying this episode. I know I had an incredible time recording it. And I've been learning so much. Strong Women, Strong World is our partner for this event. And much of their work, of course, is centering the most vulnerable children in the globe, which are living in often marginalized communities and in the world in conflict zones and what we call fragile contexts. And they're looking for basic human need. And we want to keep emphasizing that their survival and then thriving is interdependent to our survival and thriving to really be who we want to be. But I also want to draw your attention to an empowering thing that we were part of launching, and it's called Brave at braveglobal.org. I want to bring your attention because it is an empowering way of practicing what we want to see happen over there, right here. And I believe that these happen at the same time. That the more, you know, sort of generosity and self-transcendence is a little bit like an exercising routine where you begin to exercise a muscle and it grows in capacity. Or it's like love. If you know about this, the more you invest in love, the more love there is. I mean, it's kind of miraculous, but it's kind of neat. And I think the same is true with generosity and the same is true with empowerment, is the more that you empower, the more empowering of a person you become and the more that empowerment travels. So Brave Global is a local strategy right here in Western context that identifies youth at risk of human trafficking and gets there first. So before the trafficking begins, and this came out of years of my life, over 20 years of my life working with women stuck in sexual exploitation who had been trafficked or exploited and trying to undo the damage that had been done. And many of them saying like, this began when I was 11 or this began when I was 12. And we know that in America, particularly, we know the stats are 70 to 80% of all domestic sex trafficking victims in America come from foster care or marginalized backgrounds. So we help coach and provide ways for communities everywhere. So from small towns to big cities to urban centers to faith communities to nonprofits to schools to teachers, you know, everywhere to actually reach vulnerable girls and vulnerable youth, because we actually have a guys thing now too, but vulnerable youth with a message of empowerment. This is a beautiful way of living a legacy. So check them out at braveglobal.org. And if starting a Brave community, which is what we would love, which is a support group and maybe an event in your local community that begins to just really put girls that would be marginalized or invisible, putting them at the center of the story. You know, there's something just that alone is worthy. But Brave Communities portal, there's a place where you can join and there's like everything that you need if you wanted to be using that strategy in your local context. I hope it's helpful.